listening to you.
Heard it?
Oh, dear. Open to the door. So we need a motion coming in a closed session. So I've got it. I'll flip it to you, just because council should vote on the on just direction that the mayor and clerk authorized him to do that.
I will now call the meeting to order. Please note assistive listening devices for the use of the council chamber are available upon request from staff in the clerk's office. Please ensure all cell phones are turned off or placed on silent. I will now ask Councillor Kiernan to start the meeting with a prayer, followed by singing the national anthem. If everybody can please rise.
Grant us, O God, perception and patience, that justice, truth, and honesty may be evident in our planning and our governing. Make us aware of the needs of each part of this town of Caledon. Save us from parochialism that divides and so create in us a desire for progress and responsible action, that all our words and deeds may be in accord with thy will to the glory of thy holy name. Amen.
I would like to begin by acknowledging the land on which we gather, which forms the town of Caledon as part of the Gentis Treaty Lands, the territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit. We acknowledge all the Indigenous people who have walked this land in the past and who walk it today. We are grateful to have the opportunity to live and work on this land, and by doing so, we give respect to our First Nations. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest by any members of council tonight? Councillor Ennis.
Thank you. Item 6.5, with regards to the General Committee meeting report and litigation update, I, Jennifer Ennis, declare pecuniary interest in the above-noted matter for the following reasons: that my father and uncle own lands adjacent to one of the above-mentioned litigation matters.
Okay. Any further? We'll now move on to the confirmation of minutes held on January 28, 2020. Moved by Councillor Sinclair, second by Councillor Rosa, that the January 28th special council meeting minutes and council meeting minutes be approved. All in favor? Carried. I will now move on to urgent business, and I understand there is a delegation that's been requested. Moved by Councillor Groves, second by Councillor Rosa, that section 7.4 of the procedural bylaw be waived to permit emergency delegation from Cheryl Connors with respect to item 6.6 of the February 11th, 2020 Planning and Development Committee report regarding staff report 2020-0016, proposed zoning Bylaw Amendment of James Dick Construction Limited, Erin Pitt Expansion Ward 1.
I thought she was doing both. Can you do both at once? Or?
Okay. All in favor? Carried. Yeah. I will call Ms. Connors to come forward. Okay. Just hold on. Clerk told me don't just wait, Cheryl. It's okay. Moved by Councillor Groves, second by Councillor DeBoer, that Section 7.4 of the procedural bylaw be waived to permit emergency delegation from Cheryl Connors with respect to item 8.3.1, proposed regulatory changes under the Aggregate Resources Act. I was told by the clerk she wanted to do them both separately, but I think we got it sorted out. So we're going to do both back to back. So please come forward. That's why I say just wait till I got this done. All in favor? Carried. So you have 10 minutes.
Okay. Tall person. Okay, thank you very much for letting me delegate. I just wanted to suggest, though, when Monday is a holiday, that you might want to do something with procedures in order for people to put delegations in, because there's no way to put in a delegation request when the agenda is on Friday. So I wanted to speak first to the new license application for the Erin Pitt. Sorry, I'll just put that up there. So first of all, and I just gave myself a black eye. It's been one of those days. So over and over in public meetings, I said this is a new license application. So I asked that it not be called an expansion, because it is confusing to people. Expansion under the ARA means something different. It means an expansion within the existing license, and this is a new license application and should be referred to as such. I listened to the audio. I couldn't be here last week, so there were things that were said that I needed to ask questions of. First of all, it's the cumulative impact, and as you can see from the map that I placed, my understanding of how the resource designation worked in the official plan when it does it, that was done at a very high macro level, and it didn't mean blanket approval for all pits and quarries, that the individual application should still be examined by its own merit. Where it's located, whether the other land uses are, particularly sensitive land uses, but somehow over time this has come to mean an automatic blanket approval for any application within the resource area. I had this conversation with Mayor Morrison about it, that if this really is a land zoning, then you don't need a zoning application, then every single homeowner and real estate agent should be required to disclose to people that when they buy their dream home in this beautiful property of Caledon, that they're in a resource area, and that lovely farm with cows next door could become a working pit. Because we all move here, like I did 20 years ago from the city, knowing nothing about pits and quarries. And then suddenly, so they don't know, it's not disclosed to them, and it's a complete surprise to them when they find it out. And we shouldn't be expected to be experts. So it shouldn't be a hidden schedule map that you really, really have to look forward. I know Chipmira and what it means, but I don't think most people would even know to look for it. And real estate agents aren't disclosing it. So I think that's completely unfair when you just say, oh, well, it's your own fault, you should have known, because we don't know and nobody tells us, and it's really, really hard to find. So in listening to the audio, I heard the consultant say that this was a reserve area, not a resource area. And my understanding was the resource area was supposed to be gone through first before the reserve area was used for pits and quarries. And because I also heard Marilyn Morrison say that multiple times about the Rockford pit, that one of the reasons they fought it is because it was located in a reserve area and not in a resource area. So there's that. Nobody is looking at the cumulative impact. I've said this over and over and over again about the air quality reports. I have looked at so many air quality reports through the years, over numerous pits, quarries, development applications, asphalt plants, all of it. they really could be interchangeable when you look at them. Like, I swear I could put them side by side and they're really identical because they use computer modeling. They don't use real-time air quality monitoring. And with today's technology, there's absolutely no reason why real-time air quality modeling can't be used to see whether there actually is a health impact. And I know that to be true because it's what I do for a living, and over again, study after study is showing how dangerous particulates are for human health. And that is not evaluated when we look at air quality reports. By the way, you might want to tell the peer reviewer that when he posts a letter, he might want to rename the file because it says SLL letter template on the file that he used for his peer review. So he might want to not call it a template because it shows actually how much work goes in it, that they do use the same reports over and over again and just charge you that large amount of money. The second thing I wanted to talk about was the 10 phases that this 300-acre application will take place in, finishing in 2072. And got to tell you, folks, most of us are going to be dead by then. And that's if they actually meet the objective of having it happen in 2072. Does anyone know why this plan is in 10 phases? Because this is not an operational plan. It's a tax management plan. OSCA, the Sandstone Gravel Association, went to MPAC. Actually, again, when Marilyn Morrison was here, they used two test municipalities, including Caledon, to fight the industrial assessment for pits and quarries. And Caledon was used as a test site in Pooslinch, and we lost. And that cost us a lot of money because we had to pay a lot of back taxes on it. So now pits and quarries are no longer assessed at industrial assessment. Only the area actively undergoing mining is assessed at industrial assessment, which is why you now have 10 operational phases instead of a normal, you might see 3-4 at the most. What that means is the bulk of that pit will be assessed at class 5 agriculture. So that means you're not going to get real big tax revenue. I didn't see anything in the report about actually what the real tax revenue to the town of Caledon is, but the most per acre from an impact assessment is $15,000 per acre on the assessment for because it's considered class 5 agriculture. So pennies. I would very easily say that the amount of damage to Caledon roads will far exceed the small amount of property revenue. And could I ask if someone at some point tells us what the actual tax revenue is? Because it was missing from the staff report. It showed what the 3 residential property tax revenue is, but I would easily calculate that you're going to make far less money now that it's converted to a pit than you made from the residential taxes on the 3 properties that were there now. So, and the last thing I want to talk about is social impact, the lack of social impact that's in the study. Now, that's a requirement of the Town of Caledon official plan. It's not under the ARA. But is there anyone on council who lives next to a pit? And is there any staff member that does? Because I do, and I'd like to speak about what actually goes on when you live next to a pit. And this is going to be hard because I'll do this fast. I'm just going to show a few pictures of what my house is like. Upside down. Here we go. That's a view from my window, and that would be dust on it. That was unfortunately my dog's bowl, which was under a canopy around the back of the house, which is cut off by the garage as well. And that would be my dog who died of mouth cancer. In that, you can see the cloud of dust behind the trees. That's the view from my house. Just to show that's the bathroom counter inside my sealed window because that's how much dust I regularly have to clean up because it still gets inside the house. And just here's another one. That's when that happens when I open up the back of my card. That's the yellow sand from that is inside. And that's my picnic table. So that I did that to show how much dust is it. So we gave up. We don't even bother putting out our lawn furniture in the summer. We're prisoners in our homes. We never have a window open. Our windows have to be closed at all time. We have to run air conditioning all day long. And so our hydro bills are even higher because we're heated by electricity. We don't have natural gas or any other way of getting heated. So and then there's the incessant backup beeping that goes on. And that's enough to make you want to lose your mind. When you complain, as I did when they were operating on Thanksgiving outside of the operation, nobody from M&R even returned my call. I left a message with Councillor DeBoer and nobody returned your call. So when you call and ask for help, nobody ever answers you. There is no one to go to. There are no I's dotted that there is anyone to help you when they don't follow their license conditions. It just doesn't happen. So that's my on that. So my 10 minutes is up there. So that leads me into and I was just checking the agenda today and found to see about the time of it and saw with the correspondence the new proposals to amend the ARA. So this is the regulations that have come out. And that made me cry for 2 hours. So that will continue my social impact comments, that you think there is no social impact from all of this. But as soon as that secret aggregate summit was held in Caledon, that no members of the public were allowed to attend, no environmental groups, no one actually really impacted by what goes on. We were super concerned, and this document is handing the aggregate industry the keys to the kingdom. I'm sure it was written in large part by them, but it will exempt pits and quarries. It will grandfather them in perpetuity from basically every piece of planning legislation. And it takes away municipal oversight over so many things. Like, they will be able to self-file site plan amendments. They can change the entrance to a pit or quarry. They're not required to have fences around their properties anymore. If we thought it was bad now, what's going to come from these regulations is beyond terrible. So anything I thought I was upset about before pales in comparison to what happens now. Under the current regime, there is no one I can go to when they break the law. So they're licensed near me from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m., 6 days a week. We get Sundays off. But they regularly start at 6 a.m. And for a while, I was this mad, crazed woman who would get in my car at 6 a.m. in my pajamas and drive up to the pit and film them operating their equipment at 6 a.m., thinking, there, I have proof. I'd be filming it and posting it online and contacting M&R. And they would go, well, it's okay. They're allowed to warm up their equipment. For an hour. It takes them an hour to warm up their equipment. On Thanksgiving, when my young nieces and nephews come over, I can't even have them. It's a beautiful day. We can't be outside because they're operating the pit still. And then you have rah, 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 and there's dust all over the place. I emailed one time, is there silica dust in this pit? Well, yes, there is. I've had them come over to my house where they admit when there's a wall of dust coming over our property. And I'm told, well, dust is a product of aggregate operations. What do you expect? There's a drought this summer. You can't expect anything else. But when they give you those applications and they do these air quality reports, they say dust will be mitigated on site. Well, they don't. They don't. And there's no one to help you when you're suffocating in it. I've had 3 young animals die. I have been diagnosed with a chronic cough. My husband has COPD. It does cause particulates. The science is clear on this. On Wi-Fi signals, not so much. And they're stopping CP rail lines across the country over a pipeline that is far less damage than what these pits or quarries do to the environment and to human beings. So what I would like to ask, I don't think you can just say this isn't our responsibility. This is legislation that was passed 30 years ago. You know, there are other municipalities that have stood up to the province and said, no, this is going to impact us. It will impact the municipality in terms of lost revenue. You are going to hear from your residents when suddenly the pit near them is 100 acre square below the water table and a natural linkage area of the Oak Ridges Moraine, as will be allowed under these new regulations because they're grandfathered. Do we know any other industry or any other person that doesn't have to follow new laws when they're passed? This is the only industry that's allowed to. And I have, like, this is a big report. I have, aside from the few parts that made me cry for 2 hours today, I mean, it really needs to go through. Every part of aggregate operations will be made easier by this. And they will cut. So, haul routes, by the way, municipalities no longer have a say over where haul routes are, so they could be anywhere within Caledon. You know, you already have a road maintenance budget that's unaffordable. So that's what I wanted to say. And what I wanted to ask is, can we please, because other municipalities will respond to that. And when there was enough of an outcry over Schedule 10 of Bill 66, the Ford government did back down. Is it possible to form a committee to look at the regulations so the town of Caledon can respond that would take in the social impact on us as residents? That's what I would like to ask happen, because this isn't right. And by the way, the aggregate industry is the only industry that does not have to abide by other Schedule 3 industrial regulations, which would have a minimum setback from sensitive receptors. This is the only industry that is exempt from that requirement. So pits and quarries are located abutting homes, schools, churches, the places people live, play, go to school. There are no setbacks whatsoever. So when you make it easy for them, and they're just going to self-file site plan amendments. So you'll get one sent to you by email, I guess. That's how you're going to find out. You're not going to be able to comment on it. And when you look again at the amount of pits and quarries, basically all of Ward 1, you know, to say that a municipality has no right to have any say in where and how those operations happen, this is just really wrong. So just the other thing, just in case anyone thinks, residents' liaison committees don't really operate over where we are. The residents aren't allowed to attend the residents' liaison committee. I believe the town of Caledon participates, but nobody has ever asked me once in 10 years what my issues are. We've tried to attend. We were threatened to be sued when we went to the first one. So I don't even really know what a residents' liaison committee is when residents aren't allowed to participate in it. So there's that, like, just to say how ridiculous a residents' liaison committee is when residents aren't allowed to attend. And I still think in the town's official plan, there is supposed to be an aggregate advisory committee. And I really believe that industry should sit down with residents. And I've had conversations, like, well, I sound crazy today because I'm really upset. I think we're more than reasonable. There are things industry could do to make this less invasive for the people who live near them. Things about hours of operation, dust mitigation, real-time air quality monitoring, good corporate citizens try to work with the community. Unfortunately, this lumps all good players and bad players into one. So I know the big companies do work really hard to mitigate with communities, but you all know that there are many who don't care at all and don't even try. like the ones near me who have a residence liaison committee without residents on it. So that's my ask. My big ask is can we please have a committee and respond to this? It's at the EBR right now. They're asking for comments. I think other municipalities will be responding because it's not good for municipalities. So that's my delegation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Cheryl, for your delegation. I just have a question regarding the correspondence, and Cheryl raised a point about the changes, so through you to staff. Is there a deadline for us to comment, and would the public be involved in any of the process before we actually submit our comments to the ministry?
Councillor Groves, we've got that coming with a motion here by Councillor Sinclair and Kiernan when we bring it up.
Oh.
So if you don't have any questions to the delegation, if you can just wait till
perfect.
We get there, I think it'd be better served because I think other members of council want to jump in on it as
perfect.
Well.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Following the recommendations are from the Chief Administrative Officer Performance Evaluation Committee meeting report dated January 28, 2020, moved by Councillor Sinclair, second by Councillor Rosa, that January 28, 2020 Chief Administrative Officer Recruitment and Performance Evaluation Committee meeting report recommendations be adopted. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Sinclair, second by Councillor Rosa, that Chief Administrative Recruitment Performance Evaluation Committee meeting following meetings be adopted. February 7th, 2020, Saturday, February 8th, 2020, Monday, February 10th, 2020. All in favor? Carried. We'll now move on to General Committee. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Ennis, that February 11th, 2020 General Committee meeting recommendation regarding the following consent items be adopted. Staff report 2020-0018 transfer of archival record agreement. Staff report 2020-0010 proposed all-way stop control for Kennedy Road, Store Market, Thistletown Street. Staff report 2020-0031 staff relations policy and trees that cause damage to divisional fences. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Sinclair, that the February 11th, 2020 General Committee meeting report recommendation regarding the following items be adopted. Staff report 2020-0029. Service Excellence Guidelines, Staff Report 2020-0033, Proactive Use of Enforcement Task Force Work Plan, Staff Report 2020-032, Site Plan Alteration Bylaw Work Plan, Staff Report 2020-007, Request Proposal for RFP to Conduct Ward Boundary Review, Frivolous and Vexatious Complaints, and Bill 156, Security from Trespass Protecting Food Safety Act. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Sinclair, second by Councillor Innes, that February 11th, 2020 General Committee meeting report recommendation regarding staff report 2020-0026, detailed capital status report update be adopted. All in favor? Oh, we've got an amendment. Sorry, folks. We've got an amendment here. Moved by Councillor Rosa, second by Councillor Kiernan. The following paragraph be added, that the new 2020 capital project to establish the amount of $745,000 for a replacement of a large fire apparatus pumper 306 be funded from the tax-funded capital contingency reserve. Okay, everybody can see that. Councillor Rosa.
Very excited to discuss this. This is an opportunity for us to fund this pumper that we had to take out during the budget process. And now that we have found some additional dollars, this should be at the top priority. Public safety and ensuring that we continuously add to our fleet. In some of the research that I've done, in talking to some other municipalities, it's very important to add to the fleet on an ongoing basis. So you continuously keep up to date. Should never be in a situation where we're going to be confronted with old apparatus all at one time. So it's something that I strongly support. I also feel moving forward that we need to look at a long-term plan of ensuring that our fleet is always up to date and that we are continuously working in partnership with our fire departments to ensure that we never run into this situation again. Thank you.
Okay. And Councillor Kiernan's called for a recorded vote.
Thank you.
As amended. Want a recorded vote on the amendment as well? Sure. Okay.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called on the amendment. All those in favor, please stand. I see that all members of Council present are standing, carried unanimously.
Okay. Now the final motion.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called on the motion as amended. All those in favor, please stand. I see that all council members are present or standing, carried unanimously.
Planning reports, moved by Councillor Rosas, second by Councillor DeBoer, that February 11th, 2020 Planning Development Meeting Report be received. All in favor? Councillor Sinclair, did you want to comment on this? Because I think next.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Can we pull out 2020, report 2020-0016, which is the rezoning?
It's coming. We haven't got to it yet. It's a separate one.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Not a problem. It's better to be. So all in favor on this one? Carried. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Early, that February 11th, 2020 Planning Development Committee meeting recommendations following the consent items be adopted. Staff report 2020-0017, proposed bylaw amendment, Pluribus Corp, Elroy Court, Ward 3, and Heritage Caledon Committee report dated February 3rd, 2020. All in favor? Carried. So, Councillor Sinclair, this is the one. This is not the one? Oh, okay. Sorry, we got one from the General Committee meeting report held February 11th, 2020. General Committee meeting report recommendations regarding confidential staff report, proposed pending disposition of land, municipality parts 6 and 8, plan 43R-25389, George Bolton Parkway, Ward 5, be adopted. All in favor? Carried. Okay, Councillor Sinclair, here's the one you're looking for. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Innes, that February 11th, 2020 Planning Development Committee meeting report recommendations regarding staff report 2020-0016, proposed zoning bylaw amendment, James Dick Construction, pit extension, Ward 1 be adopted. Councillor Sinclair.
Yes, thank you. I wish to separate this report out and call for a recorded vote on it.
Okay.
And the reasons for that is the report it's based on is incomplete in terms of a social impact assessment, the issue of PPS, issue of compatible land uses, and most importantly, conditions. And conditions missing are on the conveyor tunnel that I know of, Credit River recharge issues, private well compensation, and other matters. And I think the way the motion is set up, that council staff are going to disappear at their discretion and deal with these important matters on their own, fetters council discretion. So that's my request. Recorded vote.
It's on the board. Does anybody want to discuss the questions? I would like to ask staff, first of all, on Councillor Sinclair, on the especially on the conveyor and different things like that. I did what's different about what Councillor Sinclair is saying to what was in the report?
So through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor Sinclair, we can meet about the site plan conditions and we can put those conditions on to the Ministry of Natural Resources. And I committed that at the last meeting that staff will meet with the councillors in the area and the mayor and go through that.
Okay. Councillor Kiernan, sorry.
Thank you. No, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So so should this then be deferred? Should this then be, you know, that meeting is probably a good idea to have prior to this. If there is a requirement for a social impact study and that's missing, then that would be something that we would need to look at. If it's not a requirement, I need to know that too. But if there is a requirement that has not been met, then we have the obligation to meet that requirement.
So through you, Mayor Thompson, so a couple of things. First, this is a zoning report, and the part about the site plan, we are a commenting agency to the Ministry of Natural Resources, and just like the County of Wellington has sent their comments related to the site plan, I believe it actually is related to the conveyor that we will certainly send to the Ministry of Natural Resources. That can be done after. In the report, it actually specifies. All right, I'm just going to get it in front of me here. That's upon staff being satisfied on the ARA license application for the site plan. So staff still have that obligation to meet and do that piece before they withdraw the appeal. So there's still time for that. As far as the social impact study, that was discussed at the last meeting, and Councillor Kiernan, if you remember, Ms. Lelonga Yates spoke to it, that there's a numerous amount of studies that are done as part of that process, and they all look and touch into that piece. It's not a separate study to say this is a social impact study. It's looking at them all together as how they affect each other, and that's how staff reviewed it.
Okay, so just to be clear, just to paraphrase, so what I'm hearing is there is no specific requirement for a social impact study.
Through the mayor to Councillor Kiernan, it's a requirement on the official plan. How we reviewed it is looking at the various studies and how they impact social impact. It's not a separate study per se saying this is a social impact.
And my last question, Ms. Tolent, thank you very much. I wrote down what you said, upon staff being satisfied. So that would not come back to council?
Through Mayor Thompson, site plan requirements are through the Ministry of Natural Resources, and staff could work with the councillors and provide that information to them. So there was concerns regarding the site plan, in which I said that staff will meet and go through that with you and then submit all the comments together. It doesn't have to come back to council. The only thing that needs to be approved by council is the zoning requirement.
Okay. Thank you. My concern is that, and I think what I'm hearing from Councillor Sinclair is that he's concerned that there have been T's not crossed and I's not dotted. I don't want to speak for him, but I think that's part of his concern. And, you know, if we have any way to alleviate those concerns, I think now is the time. So I don't know if any of my other fellow councillors. I think now is the time, right?
It's entirely up to council at this point, but again, those concerns are more related to site plan. Site plan is not under the town's jurisdiction to comment on. That's up to the Ministry of Natural Resources, which we will send comments to. Just like we comment on it from a zoning perspective for the various studies, and that's why we have peer reviewers, hydrogee specialists, the region here to review it, and they have signed off. The last piece of the site plan is we can send comments related to we have concerns about the conveyor or the road, or if we have additional requirements we want for berming, we can send those requirements, and the ministry has already agreed that they will listen to town and add those requirements in there.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Tolan. My last comment. So to be clear, we will send concerns through when we have them, but the decision will be back through to the ministry.
Excuse me?
To you, Mayor Thompson, the site plan requirements is under the Ministry of Natural Resources, not the town. No different than a telecommunications tower.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Gross?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Through you to Ms. Tollett. So through the site plan process, and I know that it's not a public process, so how will you address through the site plan, how will you address the concerns that were raised by the delegation today and last week?
Through Mayor Thompson, the site plan process is not for the town.
Oh.
See,
okay.
We do the official plan and zoning. The site plan process is through the Ministry of Natural Resources. They have their own requirements and regulations that the applicant would have to comply to. If there's certain conditions the town wants to impose, we can do that. And that's what I committed to meeting with the councillors to say, is there any other additional conditions or concerns? We can still submit those. Just like, and it's still open because it hasn't been completed. The County of Wellington has just submitted their complaints and their conditions that they want to comply with. Similar that we talked to at the last meeting about adding that protocol, that could be added as well, the complaint protocol.
So we can submit to the ministry some of the concerns that we have?
Correct.
All the concerns.
That the residents raised.
But it doesn't come back to council.
I understand that, yeah.
Yeah, no, okay. I'm just trying to.
And then how does it get communicated? So it goes to the ministry, these concerns that the residents raised. And then the ministry is going to approve the site plan. But how do they communicate, or what do they communicate with the residents who raise those concerns?
So through Mayor Thompson, I'm not familiar how they handle the return back from it. They have to post a lot of things on their website, so I can check their website to see how they refer back. Certainly, if they have questions, they can contact staff, and we can contact the minister as well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Sinclair.
Yes, thank you. I guess the first thing is a very short notice that members of council get to review such an important report on an aggregate strip mine of hundreds of acres. It's going to take many, many decades to dig out, and had huge impacts on the neighborhood and the landscape. So I was able, after last Tuesday's meeting, to go to Brampton and get a full-size set of the proposed site plans printed off so that I was able to read all the site plan conditions that are on them. Nowhere on these plans does it indicate that they're draft. So when I say there's nothing on there for conveyor tunnels, who's going to design them, who's going to maintain them, and how it's going to be taken out?
Ms. Tollett?
There's nothing in there, the Credit River recharge springs coming off along there, and a peer review criteria protocol there that if these springs were suddenly to dry up and quit, then after some assessment, the entire pit has to cease operations. Now, that's pretty heavy stuff. It's not in the site plan conditions. There was an offer in the report back in the notes that there'd be compensation for private wells if they went bad. Well, where is it in the site plan conditions? So I just point out that I've had to do my own homework, spend my own money and time to get the site plans printed up. The next very important point is aggregate strip mines are always a land use under the Planning Act. They cannot exist unless there's approval in the official plan and rezoning to permit them. We're making a decision under the Planning Act. The conditions of those decisions to permit it can be conditions on the site plan. In other words, the site plan must conform to what we decide here. But you're not putting any of those conditions on record with this motion. And that's why I'm saying this fetters council's discretion under the Planning Act. And this is the planning board for the town of Caledon. So all this stuff saying, oh, well, we're a commenting agency, rubbish. We're decision makers under the Planning Act about the conditions of how this pit will be done. Full stop.
Okay. So, excuse me, Ms. Tollett, can you answer as far as the conveyor, the river, and what Mr. Sinclair's last comments are, please? Because I think there's a question I want to ask if I hear from what you're telling us, please.
Okay, so through Mayor Thompson, so some of the comments he's talking about we can add as conditions on the site plan. So if we like, I can, once we have those conditions completed, I can put them back as correspondence to council so you have a full list of all the conditions that we asked for. But some of the comments Councilor Sinclair is referring to are technical. I'll have to look back and see what they are referring to because I have also conditions that are related to the county of Wellington as well that's similar.
Okay. So what I'm going to ask is if we can have a five-minute recess. What I would like to do, put on this motion that at least we acknowledge to put these on public record. It's not going to hurt anything. So let's take 5 minutes and add this as an amendment to put the conditions on that Councillor Sinclair had. So this is why I think we need about 5 or 10 minutes break to do this. So I will ask for a 10-minute recess to get the wording to have added to this, these conditions. Make sure that we at least we have it on public record. Okay? So. Okay, I'll let everybody read this on the screen before it's moved by Councillor Sinclair, second by Councillor Kiernan, that the paragraph be added, that the LPAT be advised that the town's support on rezoning is conditional on the following matters to be addressed through conditions of the Aggregate Resources Act site plan and wording satisfactory to the town. One, proposed conveyor tunnel design, maintenance, and decommissioning. Peer review protocol regarding the Credit River recharge and recharge springs. And private well compensation if loss of water occurs. Okay? And that was a lot of that was written in the reports that we had. But we just have it on for record. Councillor Sinclair, did you want a recorded vote on this amendment as well? Okay. So I will turn them over to the clerk and we'll go through the amendment and then the motion.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called on the amendment on the floor. All those in favor, please stand. I see that all members of council present are standing, carried unanimously. Yep. And another recorded vote has been called on the main motion as amended. All those in favor, please stand. So I see Councillor Rosa, Councillor Innes, Councillor Early, Mayor Thompson, Councillor Kiernan, and Councillor DeBoer. Those opposed, please stand. Councillor Sinclair and Councillor Groves, motion carries.
Okay. Okay. Is there anything else? Or we move on to presentations? Okay, we'll now move on to presentations. I will call upon Sandra Solonik, Advisor Community Engagement, and Chena Nikaido, Manager of Business Intelligence, Region Appeal, to provide presentation on Neighborhood Information Tool. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Thompson and members of the council. If we could request maybe 5 additional minutes to do a demonstration of the tool as well as provide you an overview.
Is everybody okay with that? Yes? Put your hand. Yep.
Thank
All in favor? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
So during 2019, the Region Appeal has been working in partnership with the Town of Caledon Strategic Initiatives Area to develop the Neighborhood Information Tool for the town. Tonight, we'd like to provide you an overview of the presentation. Sorry. Thank you. An overview of how the tool was developed and the key aspects of the tool, as well as a demonstration.
Thank you. The development of the Neighborhood Information Tool aligns to the Town of Caledon's current work plan, 2018 to 2022. In particular, the town's connected communities and improved service delivery priorities. This online data tool also aligns to the region's strategic priority, living, improving people's lives in their time of need. The two shares common data and calculates a well-being index score that is displayed through a geographic map of each municipality. The municipal map utilizes data to build a stronger understanding of community needs, to inform in local planning and decision-making using evidence. It also helps to apply a consistent methodology to measuring neighborhood well-being and providing scores at the census tract level. Census tracts are a geography informed by population used to collect data. Using census tracts ensures consistency and reliability in data. Data is outlined across six domains that contribute to neighborhood well-being and 21 indicators. An asset map by municipality also displays some of the assets that can contribute to neighborhood well-being. As referenced earlier, the well-being index is a combination of as I previously shared, the tool was developed through municipal and regional partnerships and was based on best practices and research of similar data sharing tools from other municipalities. United Way of Toronto also supported the preliminary planning of the framework. Once we designed the tool, we engaged with community stakeholders to validate the data that are being used and also the value of the well-being index score. The tool has been launched to the city of Mississauga and city of Brampton, and now the town of Caledon. As referenced earlier, the well-being index is a combination of variables to produce a measure of score of neighborhood well-being. The higher the well-being score, the better off the neighborhoods or census tract. The six domains that contribute to neighborhood well-being are social demographics, economic opportunities, resident engagement or community belonging, safety, health, and physical environment. Within each domain, there are data indicators, 21 in total. The data sources for this is Stats Canada, Environics, as well as data gathered through partnerships with Peel Regional Police, Ontario Provincial Police, municipalities like recreational usage, and also libraries for library usage. The tool was developed to ensure a consistent method to look across neighborhoods in each municipality. The well-being index score methodology enables municipalities to look across census tracts through the same domain or data indicators and identify which neighborhoods may benefit from greater discussion or exploration. The tool is online within the data center platform and is intended to be a user-friendly format for the region, local municipalities, and service providers to better understand the communities that we share and inform planning as well.
So now I'm going to click through and show you the tool. Let's hope this works well. As you open the tool online through the Peel Data Center, this information screen pops up that provides a lot of the background information that we just shared with you, explaining how the tool was developed around the indicators as well as the domains, and also providing information how different groups can use the information in planning, and also links to other information available at the municipality level, as well as the partners Peel Regional Police and United Way. As you click into the tool, you start to see a map. This is Mississauga. You click on the Brampton tab and the town of Caledon. Each area is divided by census tracts. As Shanae referenced, those are the areas that are used to collect the data. And the rating, or in the legend here, you see the rating. The darker the shade of purple, the higher a well-being score, or the better off the community. So the lighter the shade of that census tracker neighborhood, the greater need to look closer at that community and ask more questions when planning. There is an opportunity to list assets, as many as you wish, community centers, food banks, health centers are there as well, settlement. You can click or unclick as many as you wish. It's difficult to look at the map, so you can zoom in. And as you zoom in, more details will start to appear, and you can start to look at the area. So Bolton over here, you can click on and understand that particular icon, who's providing the service. If there's a website related to that service, we can click on it as well. So as you click through, I'm just going to make this a little smaller, you can select census tracts. So as I'm hovering here, these numbers are popping up. Each census tract has a number assigned to it. So the 0586-02 is a census tract number. This particular census tract has a well-being score of 76. We can click on that. Up pops up the score, the total population for that census tract or neighborhood, and the number of dwellings. We can select that area. We can also select the neighboring area. So as Caledon has a small number of census tracts, it has some limitations with the tool at this point. But I can tell you that Peel Data Center has looked at the population shifts taking place in the town of Caledon and has made recommendations with Statistics Canada around census tract geographies for the next round. And if those are approved, there'll be much more or an increased number of census tracts, which will help define those areas that are growing rapidly. So as we go out of this area, one of the things that's probably of the greatest beneficial, especially for Caledon, as you pick on, as you select those areas, the data starts to appear. So the top one here is ends with 01. That is more the Mayfield West area. 02 is the one in the bottom west side of Caledon as well. But we can look at all the indicators. So for demographics, we have information on child and youth population, senior population, visible minorities, immigration, mobility status, and lone parent families. The bottom row right here is the town of Caledon statistics. So it's a comparative at a local level. So if we look, the lower scoring area, which is the middle one, actually has a smaller youth and child and youth population than Caledon, and then the area neighboring area that has a score, well-being score of 86. We can see that it does have a senior population that is greater than the average in Caledon. And we can also see that the visible minority population is greater in the area that has a higher well-being as well. So it enables you to look by census tract level at the individual indicators, and also in comparison to the town of Caledon. Economic opportunity, this domain has some interesting information. Prevalence of low income, so that is, the definitions are here as well. That's in the 2015 after-tax income, or LIM is referred to. There's nothing that's extremely great, but the 02, which is the lower well-being census tract area, has a greater percentage of prevalence of low income. Household shelter costs are, those are the proportions that are spending greater than 30% on household shelter costs. Both areas that we selected have a fairly high percentage in relation to Caledon. As well as another interesting stat is youth unemployment rate in the top line, which is the higher well-being census tract area, there's a higher percentage of youth unemployment when we look at this domain. Resident engagement and community belonging. This is the data that we receive from yourselves, the town of Caledon and Caledon Library. To your far right is library usage. And the recreation usage, definitely there are limitations based on where the locations of your facilities are in relation to the census tracts. The sense of community belonging on the left is a Canadian Community Health Survey indicator. And it is a proportion of the population 12 plus who report a low sense of community belonging. So all three of these areas, the town as well as the two census tract areas, are over 30% of individuals report a low sense of community belonging. Health and safety. So crime rate overall, as shared by the OPP, crime data is low across all areas, including the town. However, healthy child development, which is the proportion of children who are vulnerable or not school ready, is higher in both census tract areas. As well as the far right one is self-rated health, which is the proportion of population 12 plus who rate their health as fair or poor. Both are below the Caledon average. However, 02, which is the middle one, that's the one, the census tract that had the lower well-being score, is very close to the town average. Physical environment is around proximity. So having closer proximity to food retailers, meeting spaces, and as well as housing conditions are three indicators that contribute to overall well-being. And the needs and the realities that you face in the town of Caledon are very unique. So obviously the percentages, because there are no close food retailers to the majority of the population in these two areas, as well proximity to meeting spaces. The definition for that is a 10-minute or 800-meter walk to libraries, rec places of worships as well. Same with a similar perimeter for food retailers. Housing conditions is the percentage of occupied dwellings that require major repair. There is a higher percentage in the census tract that had a lower overall well-being score. So that is a very high-level overview of how you can select as many census tracts as you wish from the map by just simply clicking on them, and then taking a look at the census tract levels to better understand the community. The neighborhood information tool is amazing in the sense that it brings 21 indicators that ensure quality and consistency. However, it is data, and data can tell you a lot of the story. However, you need to take that in consideration with what you hear from your residents, what you know about your communities as a local municipal government when planning. It is an evidence-based perspective that helps you further understand and plan for the community, but it's best used in combination with your community to understand. As well as census tracts, whether we're looking at the town of Caledon or the city of Mississauga or the city of Brampton, communities are not defined solely by census tract geography, and there are neighborhoods or pockets of greater need or less need within each of those areas. So again, it is important to have those conversations at the community level with community stakeholders to assure you understand and can further inform planning, and use this simply as another tool to bring you forward with planning. So just to wrap up our, if we can go back to the presentation. Thank you. So just to wrap up, this is, as Janae mentioned, we've launched the tool in Mississauga and Brampton, and we're very happy to be launching it for Caledon and now having it PL-wide. The majority of the data that's used is census-based. The next census will be in 2021, and once the data is released, probably in about 2022, 2023, we'll be updating it with the most recent data. The tool is designed to be a snapshot, so at that time, this information will remain available. So over time, we're hoping you can look back at previous editions of the Neighborhood Information Tool and see how these indicators have shifted across municipalities over time. As well as the tool, you know, really is also meant to be an opportunity to help inform the planning at the municipal level. We know at a regional perspective, we were asked to help inform the community hub development taking place at this Southfields Community Center that's going to open shortly, I believe. So we did try and pull some data, even though this tool wasn't yet available, to help inform that immediate area, to understand who's residing there, to help your staff, the recreation staff who were taking the lead, to look at which stakeholders and community service providers might be good to bring forward to partner in that initiative. This is the type of thing that this tool could help assist understanding the populations in these areas. We are more than willing to provide any training sessions to any Town of Caledon staff or work with the Town of Caledon to offer any training or opportunities for Caledon service providers or stakeholders to also understand the tool and how it can be used. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I have one question. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you for your presentation. I just have one question. With regards to youth unemployment rate, that percentage, 14.53.
Yes.
How did you arrive at that? Because where did you get your data from? And because we do have kids that don't work. So, yep. But I wouldn't consider them unemployed. It's just because they're choosing not to work.
So to answer that question, I'm going to ask Kevin, who's from the Peel Data Center, who is with us tonight, because he is the gentleman who's done a lot of the back-end statistical work. So I'll have him answer.
Sure. So the unemployment data comes from Statistics Canada, the 2016 census. And to be unemployed means you're either recently laid off, about to be laid off, or you're looking for work. So if you're a 16-year-old and you're not looking for work, then you're not unemployed because you're not in the labor force. But if that person is looking for work, then they're considered unemployed if they don't have a job just at that point in time.
Okay, I'm just curious how they actually arrived at that.
Yeah, so if a parent would obviously answer the census or whoever the head of the household is, and if they believe that their child is looking for work, I'm sure a lot of parents are hoping their child is looking for work. They'd be the ones that would say they're unemployed because they're actively looking for work.
Right. And I guess when I look at Caledon, one of the challenges that we have, and probably why you see the percentage a little higher, we don't have transportation. Mm. We have no public transit. And I hear it from kids all the time. I hear it from kids who are in high school who need community hours or they're 40 hours to graduate and they need to find a place to do co-op. They can't find anything, and they're limited to where they can go because they can't get any type of transportation to go outside of Caledon. So for us, I know that that's a real challenge, and I know from the kids that I talk to, it's really hard for them. So, but anyway, thank you.
Welcome. I got a couple more questions now. Councillor Rosa.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Actually, you answered my question, the last part of your presentation, because I was wondering whether the information that's currently there was going to remain there so that we could, you know, in 2021, I believe it's 2021, you said, that, you know, looking at that data is very important, especially in seeing how we evolve. So I was very pleased to see that that's going to be part of it, because I'm very impressed with this information tool, but I'm looking forward to comparing how we evolve and how we move forward. So I really appreciated that is part of this platform. Thank you.
Councillor Early.
Thank you. I love this. This is awesome. I guess first off the gate, who would I be able to contact to sort of walk me through a bit of a tutorial on this by phone? This is not the evening. And does this have the ability that I could sort of do a comparative in Peel region sort of between Mississauga, Brampton, Caledon? I guess I'm visualizing, plotting everything. I'd love to see percentages of library usage in other communities. The one that's really resonated with me is sense of community belonging. 33% of population age 12 plus to report low sense of community. I don't really know what that means. I'm drawing a conclusion what that means. But I think there's just a lot of valuable data here that we can really sort of sink our teeth into, and that could be part of our awareness factor as we continue to build plans in Caledon. This is really great stuff. Thank you. I just want to know who I can call for the tutorial.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you for the comments. By all means, you can contact myself or Shanae that are listed on this slide. We'd be more than happy to come by and walk you through the tool or assist any staff that you think this might be valuable for as well. In regards to your question of is there an ability to also look at the other municipalities, the tool is designed not to compare across the region appeal because each municipality is very unique. And as the comment around youth unemployment, the challenges that youth face in Caledon is very different than the challenges youth face about obtaining employment in Brampton or Mississauga. So there are some aspects that you can pull up independently and look. However, we do caution that the factors or conditions that contribute to those indicators are very unique across each municipality. So, but if you want a great understanding, we can definitely link you if there's any specific data to help you better understand as well. Yes, yes, by all means. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Sandra, Shanae, Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank
Glad
you.
You were here. Thank
Appreciate
you so much.
Thank you.
I will now call upon Kim Delahunt, President CEO of Headwaters Health Center Care, to provide a presentation regarding One Community Caring Together. Ms. Delahunt, and congratulations. I know
Thank you.
Publicly we
Thank
haven't
you.
Been able to say that. I know you've been
Thank
awarded
you.
It, but this is your first time coming.
Yes, this is my first time. Thank you, Mayor Thompson and councillors, for having me. And I just got to say, next time, I'm going to eat before I come. but I'm really honored to be here. I'm in my fifth month at Headwaters, and I know we have been on your agenda and trying to come for a number of months, so really pleased to be here tonight and hope you find the information still relevant and helpful. So these are just some stats from the 18-19 year at Headwaters. So lots of activity. We're a very busy community hospital. Just want to highlight a couple that I'll speak to later on. We saw over 42,088 patients in our emergency department over the 18-19 year. So very, very busy. Lots of surgeries. We had over 800 babies delivered. So we are definitely growing. You can see our stats along the bottom in terms of physicians, staff, and I just want to highlight that we have more than 400 volunteers that really, truly help the hospital run. In terms of our community, and of course you're familiar with the town of Caledon and the growth that you are experiencing, and our first stat up there is in reference to that, but Caledon, in addition to Shelburne, and a number of our areas are growing. And I'm really pleased that often municipal planning, and I've been in the healthcare sector my entire career, but often municipal planning doesn't always reflect on or include health services and social services, but it's really important that they go hand in hand. And I'm really pleased to say that we are very well connected with your planning staff, and we'll continue to meet with them as part of your work in developing your new official plan. So I think that's great that we are working in partnership. Because we do need to plan for services always being as close to home for the residents of Caledon and within our catchment area. This next slide just shows some pictures of some of the extensive engagement that occurred over the past year and continues to occur. We have a new strategic plan that I'm going to highlight on the next slide, and there was a lot of engagement with my predecessor, Stacey Dobb, and a lot of staff from Headwaters. They went out into the community. They visited farmers markets, town events, got out as much as possible, also internally in the hospital, to really hear what the people's needs were. And so this next slide is a snapshot of our new strategic plan. And what I want to highlight is that we've actually moved away from a typical mission and vision now to a purpose. And our purpose is One Community Caring Together. You can see our strategic directions down the left side and our values down the right side. And I just want to pause to highlight a couple. So in terms of our first strategic direction and getting even better, our hospital does provide high-quality care and high-quality services, but there's always room for improvement, so we're always striving to make those improvements and really working with primary care and our physicians and our community to improve services. The second strategic direction, Nothing About You, Without You, really involves us working with our patient and family advisors, staff, volunteers, listening to what their needs are and co-creating new initiatives and improvement opportunities. And our last strategic direction, integrated care close to home, again, is looking at ensuring that care is as close to home. Part of our work in that area is with our Ontario Health team that I will speak to later. And again, we're really pleased that the Town of Caledon is a partner with us in that important work. So our Ontario Health team is formerly known as the Hills of Headwaters Collaborative. There was a really robust provincial process that occurred with this exciting new initiative that the new government has launched. You can see all the dates on the slide, but the formal decision that we were one of 24 in the province named in the first wave, and there were over 150 applicants, occurred on December 6th, and that's the picture on the bottom there. We're really pleased to be one of the first 24. And I have to say that I think, you know, the strength in our collaborative is really around the partnerships, the local partnerships. There's a long-standing history of the agencies working together, and the partnerships extend beyond health. They go into the EMS. We work with our paramedics closely, with public health, with a lot of social service providers, and, of course, with our municipalities. And I think that is our strength, which will help us achieve many great things and truly bringing integrated care closer to home and making the patient and family experience a lot better. And our catchment area for our Ontario Health team is the Dufferin-Caledon area. So it's around 112,000 residents in total, and it is our mission to provide care that is seamless and integrated for all of those residents at maturity. In terms of what we're experiencing at the hospital, so we are seeing increased volumes year over year. There is lots of growth occurring with all the developments, but we are happy to see the volumes and to plan for them. We are seeing increased volumes in our cancer care program. We have a new urology program with a neurologist that joined Headwaters, which is exciting. And we continue to do great work in the area of palliative care. In fact, our primary care physicians in Dufferin, Caledon, have agreed to provide 24/7 care for any and all palliative care patients to ensure that they're never left without support, which, again, is really unique, and we're really fortunate to have that. Some of the exciting things that have occurred at the hospital, one was a Smile Zone partnership that we embarked on. And what this is it's a foundation that supported us to do a complete overhaul of our pediatric space in the hospital. You know, it included large, beautiful murals, as you can see in the photo, right through new paint on the walls, electronic devices for kids, new TVs and furniture. So really exciting to get that lift in our hospital for kids. Down below, you can see our Welcome Center lobby and emergency department reference. These are two large-scale renovations that are in progress, and they are fully supported by our foundation and auxiliary, so we are forever grateful for that. Some of you may have seen our old spiral staircase that was in our main lobby that was very dangerous and out of date, out of code. So we will be opening our new Welcome Center lobby in the next few weeks. Really exciting because it is a much safer staircase and just a whole nicer area to welcome our patients and families. As well, it includes a one-stop registration and bill payment area, as well as an updated cafe and gift shop, again, both of which are managed by our auxiliary, which is great. In terms of emergency department, you saw me reference the over 42,000 visits over the last fiscal year. Our ED was built to accommodate 20,000 visits a year. So it is not only at capacity in terms of size, it is also pretty dated in terms of how it looks. I think my second week on the job, I received an email from an individual sitting in our ED department waiting, and he was actually taking pictures of some marks on the walls and obvious areas for improvement. And so happy to say that that's working through its final approvals through the Ministry of Health Health Capital Branch. And we hope to start that work in the spring or summer to get ahead of our next influenza season. We don't want to be doing renos then. And lastly, the bottom picture, that's our Friendship Gardens and some work that occurred last year. These gardens, again, are fully run and operated by a dedicated group of volunteers. And each of our patient rooms in the hospital has a view of a garden or a tree or flowers. It is really quite remarkable. I don't think there's another hospital in Ontario that can say that every patient room has a view of a garden. So we're really fortunate There are over 20 unique gardens and over 400 trees now around, and again, all managed by volunteers. Really quite amazing. I talked about the Ontario Health Team changes. There are also a number of other changes that are happening within the health system. There are some occurring within the public health realm and also to the ambulance service. In terms of public health, you know, they're talking about reducing them from 35 health units down to 10, as well as making changes to the ambulance services, of which we are hearing that they're considering a 5-region model in Ontario. You know, in terms of these changes that are being contemplated, I think it's really important for us to ensure that smaller communities such as ours still have a voice and are still heard. And we don't want to get lost in, you know, centralization into bigger regions, as those services are really important to our residents and obviously support our hospital as well. Second last point, so our hospital is considered a medium-sized hospital in Ontario. And for a number of years, the funding formula has really hindered our size hospital. And so as a result, we have a structural deficit that has been developing over a number of years. We are continuing to advocate for that to be rectified. Really thankful for the support from the town, and Mayor Thompson himself wrote us a letter and presented it at ROMA. We continue to advocate. We did receive some one-time funding this year, an infusion of $2.74 million. That amount actually needs to become base in order for us just to balance. And again, that does not account for any growth. You've seen our growth in volumes year over year. So we continue to advocate not only for a base adjustment, but also increases to our funding. But we are grateful for the support from the town. And then lastly, mental health and addictions. This is really an area where there just are not enough supports in our community to serve these vulnerable patients and families. It is an area that we continue to work on. We have an internal working group that is connecting with many other agencies externally as well, as we really do need to do better for this population. So it's a priority that we continue to look at. These are just some stats on the medium-sized hospital erosion of funding, and it also just shows, and there are some really good reports published by the Ontario Hospital Association that show that hospitals overall in Ontario are very efficient. Medium-sized hospitals in particular, though, we're lean. We are running as efficiently as possible. There's really, you know, you can't squeeze blood out of a rock. We are really lean. We are really efficient. And so we're really just hopeful that the funding formulas get fixed going forward and that our structural deficit does get addressed in the very near future. Lastly, to end on a high note, I wanted to recognize some of our local heroes. And, you know, this is not an exhaustive list. We have many, many heroes every day at Headwaters. And each year we celebrate a few of them at our annual general meeting. So this was from our last year's annual general meeting, but starting at the top left, that's Tom Reed, our chief of Dufferin Paramedics, and Dr. Tom Willens, and they were recipients of the Dr. David Scott Award, and this is a recognition of exemplary leaders in our community. Dr. Willens retired after over 40 years of service, which is really amazing, and Tom Reed, as some of you may know, is still going strong. Top right there is Eileen Dahl and her husband. Eileen Dahl was one of our patient and family advisors at the hospital. She was also a huge advocate and a partner in our Ontario Health Team development. Sadly, she passed away in December from metastatic breast cancer. She was a passionate patient and family advisor. She was the first patient and family advisor that actually participated in a provincial forum that typically includes health system leaders. It's called Longwoods Forum. Quite amazing for the first time to have a patient and family advisor attend that session, and it was our own Eileen Dahl. So really happy that we did get a chance to recognize her. Bottom left there is a Dufferin paramedic named Stacy. Him and his partner were called to a local area home by an individual who had significant stomach pains. It turns out it was a young woman who actually did not know she was going to have a baby, and they helped deliver a baby in her bathroom at her home safely. And several weeks later, the young woman, her baby, and family came by to the local paramedic base to thank everyone in person. And that's a picture of him holding the newborn. So really amazing. And then the bottom right photo is actually of the Jennifer Woodburg Group. The Honeywood Hockey Moms started the Jennifer Woodburg Memorial Hockey Tournament to support our hospital over 12 years ago in honor of Jennifer Woodburg. Last year was their final year, and they raised a 12-year total of $652,000 to support Headwaters, which is really, really amazing. They've made it possible for thousands of people to receive cancer services closer to home at Headwaters. And with that, just to end off, you know, again, I want to thank you for your ongoing support and just to really continue to advocate with us to ensure, in terms of the public health reforms, the EMS modernization, we continue to advocate for a local voice being present and not getting engulfed into bigger regions where we lose some of that local feel. And again, just continued support for fair, medium-sized hospital funding, any chance you get. Happy to take any questions.
I have a few for you. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mary Thompson. Thank you, Kim, for your presentation. And this is my OBGY over here on the
He's stage. A lovely man.
He is wonderful. He's great. A couple of questions. First, yeah, congratulations on your role at Headwaters as the president and CEO. I have every confidence in you that you're going to do an excellent job for the hospital. And certainly I enjoyed working with you in your role at Central West Lynn and was always grateful for your support to our community and especially the advocacy for the Urgent Care Center and recognizing we need one of those in Bolton. Mm-hmm. And so sort of segueing into that, when I listen to the emergency visits, you're almost double.
Yes,
what your
we are more than double.
You're more than double mm-hmm. what your hospitals can handle. Mm-hmm. So this has been a struggle for years and years and years. I'm not sure that it's gotten any better. We hear things that, yes, it's gotten better, but I don't think so. I mean, we're hearing more about hallway medicine. People are in hallways in emergency departments waiting for a bed. So is this something that through these new health teams that, you know, and I think that we can address some of this and use these walk-in clinics, urgent care centers for those non-emergency visits, because I know that people end up at the emergency department mm-hmm. for, I mean, everybody thinks that whatever they have, they need to go there and it's important. But I think that some of the things that, some of those conditions, they can easily go to a walk-in clinic and leave room in the emergency department for those real emergency.
Yeah, so a couple of comments. So I agree. So at Headwaters, our data shows that for the most part, the visits are appropriate to our ID, which is a good thing. We are really fortunate, though, to have a community paramedicine program with Dufferin EMS. And so the Dufferin paramedics actually do well visits in homes, and often they will not bring a person to the ED if they feel they can redirect them. So they do have strong community partnerships already, which is great, and it's programs like that that need to continue. We also are fortunate that our alternate level of care, ALC rate, so that is when patients are sitting in a destination that they're not intended to sit in. If they're sitting in the hospital but waiting for a long-term care bed or waiting for rehab in the community, but it's not available, they often occupy inpatient beds. Our ALC rate at Headwaters across Central West Lynn actually continues to be low, lower than many areas in the province, and that is because of partnerships. And it's all about flow and our home and community care supports and the transition and partnerships we have with community partners actually allows us to really try to get patients out as soon as possible. But in terms of the ED, you know, do we have some patients in unconventional spaces? We do have a few each and every day. I will, again, reiterate that mental health and addictions is a challenge for us. Every day I see a daily report. I saw this morning. We had a 72-year-old and an 18-year-old, both with an OD, sitting in our ED, and, you know, our access to inpatient beds. The closest center is William Osler. So we have to wait for a psych consult to occur, them to be assessed, and then to determine whether they're going to go into an inpatient bed or what we can do. So, you know, unfortunately, that is an area where we really need to work on partnerships. I am optimistic that the Ontario Health Team and that work is going to help in that regard, because we do have to build supports around our patients. The last place we want is them to be in the hospital. The more we can support people in their homes, the better, mm-hmm. And really keep the emergency department and hospital services for the acute care needs as necessary.
Thank you. And I know that a lot of the doctors now they're doing house calls again.
Yes.
I mean, which is really nice to see, because then that's another way of not having people at the emergency department. And maybe that's something that your health teams can mm-hmm. start looking at, in how to get more doctors involved in that program, because not all the doctors are involved in it. But that's something that I would suggest that the mm-hmm. new health teams have a look at. I lost my train of thought, but anyway, the other thing that you raised, our health team consists of communities that are way larger than our community here in Dufferin. And so you said something about not getting lost with these larger communities. Mm-hmm. So I think that for me is a concern, because I know that I've been struggling with getting PSW workers in Bolton for years and years and years, and I continue to hear from my seniors that they just can't get the care. I've got seniors that waited for PSWs, they passed away and never had a visit from a PSW, so that's a challenge for us. So I'm hoping that through this new health team, that would be something that they can address.
Absolutely. So, you know, the government's vision is to assign or transfer the funding and oversight for home and community care underneath Ontario Health Teams. So when that occurs, I think actually our strength is in the size of our Ontario Health Team, and that it is smaller. You know, and the vision and the discussions we're having is to really create one team that will look after, whether it's likely neighborhoods, all the care needs. So we will ensure that we hire all the right healthcare professionals to provide all the care and services for those neighborhoods. So I think it will only get better.
Good to hear. And finally, I was at the Hospital for Sick Kids with my son for his visit, and one of the concerns that was raised by his physician there was that they're losing some of their doctors to the U.S. because the U.S. is recruiting them. They're offering them all sorts of great incentives. And so at Headwaters, are you able to retain physicians, or do you have physicians that are leaving?
No, not that I'm aware of, not at all. We have really good retention. I have to tell you again, you know, in my first few months, I would always ask staff when I was walking down the halls or taking the elevator, and I'd say, so how long have you worked here? And I would get, oh, I've only worked here 25 years. The average tenure at Headwaters is amazing. I have to tell you, the physicians and a number of the staff are dedicated to that hospital and that community. It's amazing. So we do not have an issue with physician retention. Happy to say.
Yeah, very glad to hear that. And finally, Kim, I know that you guys were at our Bolton Farmers Market, so thank you for that. You were out there talking to our residents and sort of getting to know the community, which I think is really important. And my mother goes to your dialysis unit. She got transferred there and she started, what, about a month ago? And I can tell you she is very happy with the service that she receives at Headwaters. So hats off and to you and your team, because I've used Headwaters myself a few times, and I can tell you, you've got a great staff and you've got a great team, and it's just a really great hospital. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Kim, congratulations on your new position. Well deserved. And Headwaters is my hospital. It has, Orangeville's been my health care forever, other than originally Dr. Vargo on Cedar Drive in Brampton, or in Caledon, just up for the credit. I actually personally knew Dr. Willens, and what a brilliant, brilliant man. And like you say, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you that I'm so impressed with the care that is always received from the frontline staff to the people checking you in, whether you're having a day surgery or you've had a mishap and you have to take a family member to the ED. It is top shelf and always community, caring. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. You might get a warm blanket brought into you, things that are unheard of in the big city hospitals. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really quite astounding how, you know, with the growth and with how busy you are, that your staff and your caregivers are able to maintain that personal care. And I think that's just so important. So please throw that forward, Bree.
Yes.
I've also spent many weekends volunteering digging dirt in your gardens, and have attended every year of the house, the Headwaters house tour.
Oh, great.
Last year it was canceled, right? I missed last year.
It was, I believe. And
well,
I think I'm looking at my
challenge.
Director of comms
yeah.
then. But
change
did
dates
they rebrand
or
it or something? Okay.
They're gonna, yeah, there was a different date. It's always
yes.
in September. So I'm a huge supporter of my hospital.
Thank you.
Before you brought this presentation forward, I had already familiarized myself with this collaborative back when this announcement came out from the province.
Yeah.
And I've been very excited about this because I believe, you know, there's money in them, their hills, in this card, and money that can maybe help you. Because $2.7 million on that budget, I mean, we deal with the budget here, that's a drop in the bucket for you to do what you do up there. Absolutely, you'd be running at a deficit every
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospital is dated, you know, to sit there and see
yeah.
that you 40,000 people, they're going to kick the wall, things happen. So kudos to you for taking that, you know, and your team for taking the time and the attention to make some changes. We've got that separate wing now. I have a couple of questions. Palliative care. You were saying that that's really something that you're focusing on. Is that being done in-home or in hospital?
Both.
Right.
So actually, as Councillor Groves mentioned, so there are a number of family physicians that are doing home visits. Not all of them, but a number of them are, and they're dedicated to that. And so we're, you know, continuing to enhance our program
yeah.
inside the hospital. It's also one of the priorities in our OHT.
Yeah.
So again,
so like
creating
an
integrated
hospice.
System. So that, exactly.
Right.
So and again, letting people have the choice of where do they want to spend their last days,
that's
and how
right.
can we make it the best for them.
That's right. I know that in Muskoka they do a lot of in-home hospice
yes.
and whatnot too.
Yes.
And it's a really good program, and the people really like it. Couple other things I wanted to just say. And again, I just want to talk about your excellent care. Don't change that, please. I guess at the end of it, I acknowledge your efficiencies. I don't know how you do it on such a thin budget. And, you know, whatever I can do to assist you as a member of this council or as a member of the community, you have my full and undying support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Early.
Thank you. Great presentation. First of all, congratulations on your new role. That's wonderful.
I get music too.
and really, congratulations on being one of the 24 that were selected for the new Ontario Health Teams. I think that is most exciting for us. I know that there was a focus on medium-sized hospitals, so I'm very interested in that. I understand that we've had some introductory meetings and that a lot of our stakeholders were included in those
mm-hmm.
meetings. I know Calvin Community Services,
yes.
Which is a board I sit on,
yep.
and I know Meals on Wheels.
Yep.
And I think we're still at the stage where we're doing some understanding and figuring out as to where everybody sits at that table
yep.
and how we're going to associate. But I think for us it's a really great news story. We have so many really phenomenal stakeholders throughout Dufferin and throughout Caledon that really offer differing services that now if we can pull it all together in a team unit, I think
yeah.
we're going to be able to serve the community a little bit more effectively. I did want to make a comment on PSWs to Councillor Groves' note. This is a really difficult situation is that the PSWs everywhere are facing significant burnout. And coupled with that, their salaries are not parodied.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really difficult for some organizations to keep them because they get better offers, they go. The lifting, the burnout, the care,
yeah.
It's really something that we've been discussing. I know one of my fellow
yeah.
board members is in the audience this evening, and it's something that we discuss on a regular basis as to how we're going to combat that as we have this aging population going forward. So I concur with Councillor Kieran and Councillor Groves. Very excited about your hospital, and we're here to help you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Kim, there's no further questions from the group, but I do have one, or I want to do, first of all, a shout out on your cancer care. I think it's stellar. It's one of the finest there. And I know the Headwaters Collaborative, too. It's one of the first ones to be recognized out of the mm-hmm. province, too. So it goes to show the job you do. But could you, one thing that I do know, and especially at Roma, we talk a lot about, but you're a model, is your paramedic care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's that pilot mm-hmm. that's still
the out
there.
The paramedicine, yes.
Maybe explain a little bit about that, because we know with the Peel influence, but for rural health care, this is something I think is going to become a permanent way of doing business. So maybe explain a little bit about what the paramedics do.
So... And so there's a few in the province that are similar, but for us, so first of all, you know, there's a partnership and agreement between Dufferin County, the hospital. So the paramedics are actually, they're hospital employees, which is a bit unique, which is nice. So Tom Reed actually reports into my VP of Patient Services and Chief Nursing Executive. So we've got a close working relationship in that regard. But, you know, the community paramedicine program was aimed, again, at keeping patients from unnecessarily coming into emergency departments or into the hospital. So, you know, the paramedics are often the first ones at the home to assess and... Thank you. You know, and in the past, the legislation was that they had to take them to the emergency department. That has since changed, and with these community paramedicine pilots that occurred, they were trying different models where when they did a visit, was there... some services that could be provided in the home so they wouldn't need to bring them to the ED. Could they refer them to either their primary care physician or other services in the community, again, to really avoid unnecessary transfers to the ED and unnecessary increased volume. So it's done really well. Our paramedics, you know, in Dufferin as part of this program, they know the partners, they know the physicians. They, you know, they'll often show up at a home and say, who's your family physician? They'll say the name, and on speed dial, they'll be calling that doc saying, I'm here, this is what's happening. Often the family physician will come and do a visit, or they'll say, oh, do this, do that. And then it avoids an unnecessary visit to our ED. So it's a really great partnership. It's a program that I do hope gets replicated everywhere. I'm a huge proponent of it because we see the results and the value every day. They are so well connected, and they're just an extension of the hospital. And again, you know, we're not looking to get more business. If, you know, if we could have less people come, that's really the goal here. We don't need more hospitals. We need more home and community care. We need the supports out there. So whatever we can do to support that is the best for everyone. And that's what we're here for, better health care.
And I think a lot of times, you know, with under the Peel paramedic, and it's because they're legally obligated, they encourage everybody, you need to go because... they're not covered. But these are experts, well-trained professionals being able to be utilized. And it's a lot cheaper to be able to treat and triage them at home versus bringing them in. It's a win for everybody. But I think this is a tide is changing. But I got to tell you, the Dufferin model is well-recognized across the province. So kudos to the good work.
We love it. We don't want to change it.
But anyway, thank you so much for
coming in.
Thank
you for having me.
Really appreciate it. And
thank you.
Looking forward to your visit again. So thank you so much for coming. Okay. I will now move on to correspondence. Councillor Sinclair.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regard to proposed regulatory changes under the Aggregate Resources Act. I think this is the first time council has seen any reference to this. I've just printed off the proposed regulatory changes myself and haven't read them all. So I really think it would be useful to have an opportunity to review them a little more thoroughly and possibly then... have you write a letter to the minister pointing out the particularly unique situations where Caledon's geology matters a great deal to us, particularly we drink our groundwater up here.
Absolutely, Councillor Sinclair, and I do have a motion here, but Councillor Gross, do you want to speak first before I bring the motion forward? Okay. Absolutely, and I think the first edition that we got of this letter was all in French. It wasn't in English. We finally got it, but it's very, I agree with you, it's very vague on, there's no substance to a lot of the statements, so it's a concern. So moved by Councillor Sinclair, second by Councillor Kiernan, that the correspondence from the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry regarding the proposed regulatory change under the Aggregate Resources Act dated February 13, 2020, be referred to staff for further review, and that the town response to the correspondence be sent from Mayor Alan Thompson to the Minister of Natural Resources and Forestry. Okay. Councillor Groves, will you want to speak to this?
Okay. Thank you. So we just heard from Cheryl, who delegated on this correspondence, and one of the things, and I thought I would see it in here, but maybe I'm jumping the gun, but one of the things that she had asked is for a group, a citizens group, that would be able to participate in this process, because I understand it, Ms. Tollett, we need to, what was the date that we have to send comments back?
Through Mayor Thompson, the date for the deadline is end of March, but anybody can submit comments directly to the Environment Registry. There's a link on to the memo that takes you to their website, and it gives you an area where you can submit comments. It doesn't have to just be from the town. The town will probably submit their own comments, but residents can submit their own comments directly.
And so I guess, would there be any public consultation on this before we submit our comments?
Through Mayor Thompson, there's really not much time between now and to the end of March to submit comments. Like, staff are still reviewing it. Again, the public can submit their comments directly. They can submit their comments to the town, and the town can formulate that as part of our response.
Yeah.
So I was just going to, do you mind for a sec? Ms. Tollett, we do have till the end of March, so we can bring this to our to a council committee meeting and be able to deal with it to the public at that point, could we not?
Yeah, we can work on that for the March one, which will have to be started now, basically. Right. Like, the March reports are pretty much due in the next week.
But it can allow a lot of public dialogue that way. I think it will be the quickest to be able to do it, and we'll try to get as much information out as we possibly can. One is, we've got to really dive into the information, and I think, as Ms. Connor said, there's a lot there, but when you read the first subtitles, there isn't a real whole lot of substance. There's there's one thing that the province did agree to through AMO, saying that they would compensate truck routes, which in the original wasn't, but that was changed at the legislature and the committee, that truck haul routes have to be compensated. The secondly is about water, was the other one that came through. So, but I don't really see that yet in the document, but I haven't fully read it. So that's where we're caught. Councillor Groves, I'll turn it back. Is there more you want to add?
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, this is where I have a problem with the province, because they come out with all these changes and really not giving us enough time to respond or to even consult with our community. So is it possible to ask the province for an extension with a deadline?
AMO has asked for an extension to the deadline. We have not yet heard.
Yeah.
We've asked for it to extend it for everybody, because TAPMO, which is the top aggregate producers, and what's the other one? I can't think. There's a couple of the groups that are asking, look, we need time, and we need this to be extended. So we've asked for that, and they have time to extend it, but they just haven't said anything as of yet. But I know we can definitely... If you want, we can even send a letter asking for that as well.
I think
separately.
I think that would be helpful, Mayor Thompson. If
I'll
you
take
could.
That as direction.
Yeah,
versus
absolutely.
Emotion. All right. I'll gladly ask for that.
Yeah. So the other, I guess I'm just wondering, is it, because I don't think most of us around this council, including myself, I'm not understanding this really, and some of these changes that are coming down. I mean, they're coming so fast that we really need to be well-versed in these changes and understand these regulations, and I will tell you that I don't understand them, and I'm okay for saying that. And especially in Caledon, because we have so many of these pits and quarries in Caledon, we really need to have a good understanding as well as engaging the public. So I'm just wondering, is it possible to do a workshop, hold a workshop where council can participate along with the public?
We can look in to see what we can do.
Okay.
We'll look into that. Absolutely. Okay. See if we can make that work.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Innes?
Thank you. So a couple things to follow up on Councillor Groves' suggestion on the workshop. Wondering if maybe the best means would be that when the report comes back in March, that we actually just have an open house session that evening as a possibility. Because they will have that, they'll get it when we get it. Unfortunately, it's not, as Councillor Groves and I have often said, it's not enough time for us to actually review it in depth, but at least there's an opportunity to have an open house opportunity conversation. So I'd make that suggestion. But your motion, I think that there needs to be two changes. One, I think that it's a big miss that we're not actually including a copy of the correspondence to our member of provincial parliament. She is our advocate.
Okay.
And that needs to be added. The other is the way that it's sort of worded makes it sound like it's not council's direction. It's just a letter from you. Really, it should be worded to say that a staff report come back for council's approval and then that direction be forwarded to the ministry. So I'm going to make a suggestion that those amendments be made. Because right now, it just that the way the motion is worded is it's a letter coming from you based on your comments. It's not actually council's comments.
Well, that's my intention.
I know it was.
But understood.
The wording of the motion is incorrect, and so
okay.
I think it should be changed.
So what I'm going to do is, just out of fairness for Amanda, we're going to take a I got Councillor DeBoer. Yeah. I'll take his comments, and then I'll take a five-minute break to get this wording right with a little bit of help. Okay? Councillor DeBoer.
I was going to make the same comments, is that we need to actually have it so there's direction from council, so having that worded or reworded so that that's included.
Okay.
So as far as open house, I think if staff do get the opportunity to get the information and are satisfied that they can have an effective open house, but when there's so many questions, you yourself have said that there's very little understanding here to have an open house with a topic that's very not understood or can't be explained by the province, it's going to be very difficult to open house to justify it. I think we should be considering to ask the ministry to come and maybe explain some of these changes if there seems to be too many questions after staff and yourself have had an opportunity to delve into it a little bit farther and find out what it means.
Yeah. And then if you look at the report, it's just there's no substance in any of the statements they're making, which is concerning. But it's a thick document, so maybe it's in the more in the addendum. But to me, I'm really disappointed because generally you get a little more stuff with it. But anyway, we can look at that.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is we're going to take a five-minute break, just so we can get the wording right, and we'll keep this moving. Only a five-minute break. All right. Yeah. So we'll call the meeting back. Councillor Sinclair and Councillor Kiernan agreed to pull back this motion to bring this next one forward instead. With council's permission. Is that okay? Okay. So we'll take a minute to allow everybody to read this. So it's moved by Councillor Sinclair, seconded by Councillor Kiernan, that the correspondence from the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry regarding the proposed regulatory changes under the Aggregate Resources Act, dated February 13, 2020, be referred to staff and report back on March 24, 2020, and that the Member of Parliament, the Honourable Sylvia Jones, MPP, Dufferin Callanby, requested to host a community consultation session regarding the proposed Aggregate Resources Act regulatory changes prior to March 30th, 2020 deadline. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. So the only concern that I have here is we're asking Sylvia to host this community meeting or community consultation. Well, how are residents going to be notified? Like, how is she going to notify?
Well, the issue is if we ask her, she's kind of got to deliver on it. One is the ministry will show up for her. It's questionable if we can get the ministry to be partake in what we're asking for. But with her, she can bring the ministry that we can't. Oh. We know for sure she can get the ministry here.
Okay.
Right? So and I think that's what the residents are really asking for. It's great to have something, but let's get someone from the ministry involved.
Okay.
And this is a request, and this is part of her role doing as a council request.
Yeah, so the other concern that I have is her timelines, because I know that they're really busy. She's very busy, so I'm hoping that we can hear back from her.
I can assure you I will be on the phone first thing in the morning.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll be the first thing I do. It's a little late to call her tonight, but I will definitely call her in the morning to make sure that we give her a heads up on what the council's position. I think we need to send a strong message here on this, so if someone could ask for a recorded vote, I think it would be moved by Councillor... Oh, Councillor Rosa, sorry. Okay, sorry, guys. Councillor Rosa.
No problem. Thank you. Just in response to Councillor Grove's suggestion about getting the message out, we as councillors and working here, once a date and a time location has been confirmed, it would be important for us as well to get that message out to our residents and maybe use the local media as well to get the message out, a lot of the community pages, and we can reach out, and I think we can definitely help getting presence at the meeting. Thank you.
Councillor DeBoer.
And I would suggest that we offer up the lobby on the evening that the report comes back or the staff comments come back to us, and we offer that they have a location here within our lobby to discuss it if it works for them.
Okay. I can definitely do that as well. Anybody else? I saw someone else had their name on there. Okay.
It was Amanda.
Oh, okay, sorry. I just thought there was another one. Okay, so I will pass this over to which one? No, that's that one. Yeah, this one's no good.
Yeah, I'll take that.
So, okay. So, yeah, go ahead, Councillor Gross.
We know for sure Sylvia is going to say yes to this, right? She's not going to say no.
I'm going to definitely be very strong on this.
Okay, okay.
And that's part of how council's supposed to work, that if we request this. So I think we've given her a pretty wide timeline. She's got 6 weeks.
Okay.
So we'll figure it out.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called on the motion. All those in favor, please stand. I see that all members of council present are standing. Carried unanimously.
Councillor Kiernan, as acting mayor, do you have any announcements to make, or anybody over the side? Okay, Councillor Groves. Yep. Okay.
Yep. So just a quick reminder that the gala for Jason's Quest is next Friday, February 28th. If anyone hasn't purchased their tickets yet, we still have tickets available for that fundraiser, and it really is a very worthwhile cause. So. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Rosa.
About a short year ago, about this time a year ago, I announced that local Bolton resident Andrew Mangiapane had played his first NHL game with the Calgary Flames. And I'm very proud and pleased, as he's one of my former students as well, that he scored his first career hat trick yesterday. Yes. For the Calgary Flames, and added an assist as well. So 4 points in one game for a young Calvin man. And I just wanted to publicly recognize that and make that announcement. Thank you.
Thank you. Or maybe we can do that, a bit of a Caledon proud shout-out for him. How about that? Councillor Early.
Thank you. Just wanted to remind everyone that this Saturday, February 22nd, is the coldest night of the year. And the Caledon Community Services is raising awareness on this event that actually has been held in several municipalities to assist with the hungry and the homeless. The walk, there'll be a 2K, 5K, and 10K walk that takes from Caledon East. And we've got a couple of routes. So if you want to go into cnoy.org, and you'd be able to get into the website, and we really hope that you register. It's going to to be a great event. And this is the inaugural event for Caledon, but certainly has been held many times over. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I also want to...
Alan, can I say something? Sorry, Mr. Mayor.
Councilor
Just Kiernan. To chime in on what Councillor Early said, if you can't register and walk in it, you can support someone who already is registered and walk in it, like I already have, because I'm not here on Saturday. And to what Councillor Rosa said, who isn't a former student of yours, Councillor Rosa?
Okay. I would also say the following proclamation on March 8th is International Women's Day. So we'll stay tuned. There'll be more to come on that. Councillor inquiries, I will start with Councillor Kiernan. Anything over there? Councillor DeBoer?
Yes. Yeah, just a question, and we're coming into the summer season. Something that I was experiencing it's summer. We're February, right into March. Look at what nice day it was yesterday. Think positive. And I was up in Bracebridge a few times last summer, and in Bracebridge they offer up somehow, and I don't know how they do it, and I don't know if staff can investigate how they do it, but they offer up the restaurants if they want to have a patio on the sidewalk. They put a boardwalk out that accommodates the parking spots or a parking spot in front of the store. Whether something like that is feasible, I know that we're continuing with the all-day parking in the downtown core, and whether it's something that, store owners and the restaurant owners downtown would benefit from this extra bit of room. And what it was is it allows the sidewalk to be used for a patio, and then the walkway ends up being the boardwalk coming around, and whether we can investigate how they do it in Bracebridge, because there they have a number of places that do it.
Mr. Arbuckle? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Sinclair.
Thank you. A short while ago, I had an email from staff announcing a road closure of McLaren above the Forks of the Credit Road for a 12-hour period for some kind of film shoot. And I pointed out in a reply that it's the second line west of Highway 10. The first line doesn't go through. The third line doesn't go through. So if you shut that down, it's a very long detour to get around. And I can recall some policy being put together many years ago now to deal with these film shoots, because they were showing up and shooting sports car commercials on the Forks Road and closing the Forks Road for 20 minutes to half an hour at a time, and really causing a ruckus for residences. So I would request an update on whatever the policy is for road closures for film shoots. You know, road insurance, who's doing the policing for stopping cars, and notification to residences, and so on. And so that's my first inquiry, is an update to council as a whole to see where we're at.
Mr. Wong?
Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor Thompson. We can certainly provide that update. With the Service Caledon, I'm not sure if it's my area or Service Caledon now,
okay.
But we can certainly provide the update.
Okay. I'll let you guys sort that out. It's getting late. I don't want to fight. Councillor Sinclair.
There's a question of what's happening to correspondence addressed to mayor and members of council. And a former councillor for Ward 2 approached me at one of the open houses and asked if I ever seen a letter that he addressed to mayor and members of council. And I said, nope, never saw it. And I don't see anything in our correspondence package that shows up addressed to mayors and members of council. So we're going to have to change the rules of procedure, I guess, to make it explicit that those letters do come through to us, right? So that's my request there.
Now, do you want to? We do have a policy about that, Councillor Sinclair, and I wasn't aware it was to all council. I thought it was just to the councillors, and I know the area and regional councillor were working on it and responded right back to them. So I wasn't aware that it was addressed to all the council. So
But it's quite common. And the reason is I thought it was just like everything else that comes through. We generally get back with him, and I know there's a lot of dialogue back and forth, so I wasn't aware that he wanted it on the document.
Well, perhaps that former counselor didn't understand either, because that was the practice certainly years ago when he served and when I served.
Okay. If I do that, we'll have a lot a lot of correspondence.
And maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Can we have an update, I guess, from Public Works? There were consultants hired regarding the reconstruction of George and McFall Streets in Caledon Village, and it's been a full 6 months since the last contact on that topic, and that's an outstanding issue with the residents. So we need that.
Mr. Wong?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. The design has been submitted to town staff, and town staff are reviewing it.
Okay, but you have to keep the council members of the ward informed. It just doesn't disappear, right? Last query is, I thought there was a consultant hired for an economic development strategy review. Where is that gone?
Mr. Arbuckle?
So through Mayor Thompson to Councilor Sinclair, so it's actually on schedule for March, the economic development strategy coming to council in March.
Are we going to see a draft ahead of time, or
through you, Mayor Thompson. So, as part of the economic development strategy, the consultant reached out to all members of council and to meet directly with them in relation to what they wanted to see from the report. And that report will come directly to council for council's feedback on that.
So, we're not going to see a draft before it comes to council.
Through Mayor Thompson, no.
Why not?
So through Mayor Thompson, so to Councillor Sinclair, so we did bring a report forward, a memo specifically to council to indicate the path forward for the creation of that strategy. Council accepted that memo, and we will bring that report with the consultant to the next council meeting.
Unsatisfactory. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Gross.
Thank you. Just to follow, there was a study that was done. We started it, the Queen Street Corridor Study. It was to look at Highway 50 in Bolton from Mayfield Road up to Columbia Way. So will that be part of this?
Mr. Arbuckle.
So through Mayor Thompson to Councillor Groves. So the Queen Street Corridor Study was provided to the consultant as part of the overall information for them to look at specifically. In relation to, as part of the strategy, we will be bringing back recommendations to move forward in relation to a Bolton revitalization plan. And part of that, the Queen Street Corridor study would be used as part of that overall revitalization piece.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. No further inquiries. Moved by Councillor Early, moved by Councillor Innes, that we go in confidential session. The council should go into confidential session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act for the following purposes. 11.4, advice of subject to solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for the purpose of verbal update from Chris Barnett, partner of Osler Hoskins Hardcourt, regarding the Bolton Residential Expansion Study. 11.1, confidential report, 2020-0038, personal matters about identifiable individual, including municipal, local board employees, community champion 2020, labor relations or employee negotiations for Caledon Professional Firefighters Association, IAF, local 4686 collective agreement negotiations, verbal update, labor relations and employee negotiations on QP agreement ratification, verbal update. All in favor? Carried. Ready? Good. Council convened in closed session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act for the following purposes. Advice on subject solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for the purpose of verbal update for Chris Barnett, Osler Hoskins Hardcourt regarding the Bolton Residential Expansion Study, BRES. Direction was given to Chris Barnett of Osler Hoskins Hardcourt. I better go in order here. So we'll go to labor relations. For Caledon Professional Firefighters Association, IAF, Local 4686 Collective Agreement Negotiations Verbal Update. Direction given to the Manager of Human Resources. 11.3. Yes. Okay. Okay. Moved by Councillor Early, second by Councillor Innes, that the Mayor and Clerk be authorized to enter a collective agreement on April 1st, 2019 to March 31st, 2023 between the Town of Caledon and QP Local 4686. Oh, no, that's QP. This is QP, right? Sorry. QB1's getting late. 966, as outlined in the presentation provided by the Manager of Human Resources, dated February 18th, 2020. All in favor? Okay, so this is the other one. Moved by Councillor Early, second by Councillor Innes, that Heather Broadbent and Joe Gray be selected as the recipients for the 2020 Community Champion Award. The 2020 Community Champion Recognition Night recipients are listed as Schedule A to Confidential Staff Report 2020-0038 be endorsed. The award recipients be listed on Schedule A to Confidential Staff Report 2020-0038 be made to a public after council approval. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Early, second by Councillor Kearney, the following bylaws be read and finally passed. Bylaw 2020-007, Bylaw 2020-008, and Bylaw 2020-009. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Rosa, second by Councillor Early, that the following bylaw be first time and passed. Bylaw 2020-010, bylaw confirmed proceedings of the Council of Corporation of the Town of Caledon is council meeting held 18th day of February 2020. All in favor? Carried. Councillor Kiernan, move adjournment. Recorded vote? She wants a recorded vote? Carried. Yeah. Okay, go home and get some sleep.
I will.